This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we take a look at key issues that affect students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. I'm your host, Hunter Mitchell. On today's broadcast, we're addressing the new hepatitis A and meningococcal immunization regulation for students in Kentucky. We have three guests in studio who will be answering questions today. To begin, we have Kentucky's Commissioner for the Department of Public Health, Dr. Jeffrey Howard. How are you doing today, Dr. Jeffrey Howard?
I'm very well, Hunter. How
awesome.
Are you?
Thank you. Second is the Health and Wellness Coordinator of Fayette County Public Schools, Ms. Debbie Bowen.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? And finally, we have the Clinical Services Officer of the Lexington-Fayette County Health Department, Ms. Jill Keyes. Thank you all for joining us. How are you, Jill?
Good, thank you.
Awesome. I wanted to begin with a question for Dr. Howard. Dr. Howard, for those listening who might not know, could you explain what hepatitis A and meningitis are and what the difference is between the two?
Sure. So, first off, let me thank you guys for hosting this and having a discussion about pertinent health topics. It's always great for us to get the message out there, and we appreciate your efforts. So, starting off with hepatitis A. Hepatitis A is a viral infection, so it's hepatitis A virus, that typically spreads via the fecal-oral route. So what that means is someone typically doesn't have proper sanitation after they use the bathroom and they pass the virus on that way. Currently in this state, we have a hepatitis A outbreak. So this is a very pertinent conversation to that issue. We've had 90 cases of hepatitis A, approximately 90 cases of hepatitis A across the state in the last 6 months. We typically have about 20 for the entire state. This is related to outbreaks that are occurring across the country, particularly in San Diego and Utah, and our outbreak has been linked to those. So again, hepatitis A is a virus that affects a person's liver. Symptoms common to this would be pain in the right upper quadrant, that's in the right upper side of the abdomen. They may turn yellow or jaundice. That is from how our body controls a molecule called bilirubin. Meningococcus is actually a bacteria, so different from a virus. It's a bacteria that can get into the spinal or the CNS system, the central nervous system, and cause meningitis. And so we're talking hepatitis A, a virus, meningococcus, a bacteria. Both of these can cause infections to people, and vaccinations can prevent those infections.
So in light of that, why is it so important that children, especially now, are getting these vaccines for that?
So, well, first off, vaccination is one of our best opportunities to prevent diseases. There are certain diseases, especially meningitis, hepatitis A, that can be so detrimental that we think it's important that we prevent them rather than just treating them. So that is why we've added them to the vaccination schedule. I should say that the Centers for Disease Control has long recommended these vaccinations be part of the vaccine schedule. The change that was made in Kentucky in the previous year was to catch up to what the Centers for Disease Control has recommended for a long time based on extensive data that they collect and analyze.
So, Joe, could you speak a little bit to that? We've talked, obviously, that the CDC has recommended this for a while. Is that specifically why we sort of just now introduced the bill to have it as a requirement?
Yes, it's definitely something that the CDC has recommended for several years. We've been giving these vaccines to a lot of people on the recommended schedule. It's just not been required in the state of Kentucky.
Debbie, could you talk a little bit about, so in order for the vaccination to take effect properly, you have to have 6 months in between, is that correct?
Correct.
So if students haven't already gotten the vaccination, what do they need to do now? Do they still have time to get that done before the fall?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're recommending that they at least have their first vaccination before they start to school August 15th. And then they'll be given grace until they get the second in the series. We're not encouraging families to run right into the doctor's office right now at the height of flu season. Mm-hmm. So just make your appointments, get your well checkups, and get them done then.
Jill, what specific places can parents take their children to get these shots? Can you just go to any hospital, or is it, you know, it's a certain
office? Most children have a primary care physician, mm-hmm. pediatrician, family care doctor. They can go to there. That's probably the best place because they can, as Debbie said, get their well child exam. During that exam, they can talk to the doctor and they can get the vaccination at the visit. If they are unsure about where to go, they're new to the county or to the state, they can contact their health department to see if their child is eligible to receive vaccine there.
Debbie, how are you guys getting the word out to parents? I mean, obviously, you guys are just communicating this with them effectively, but what all are you guys doing to make sure that they get this shot before school comes?
We have sent letters. We find that letters are not very effective. Mm-hmm. We have flyers that will be going home with report cards. We have our media students have done PSAs that will be shown on our media outlets, and also we're going to try to get them on the local media outlets. We're doing Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, anything that we think people will get the message. Parent to parent, there are a lot of parent message boards out there on Facebook. A lot of groups on Twitter, so we're trying to get the message out there as well.
You guys mentioned before we started about how kind of important and stuff like this is, like going out on TV stations and radio stations. How much has that made your all's lives a little bit easier, just being able to reach more people through media members like that?
Oh, we very, very much appreciate any media folks that invite us in to have this conversation, not just about these vaccines, but about all vaccines. They're very important to the health of our community and to our children.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. You guys are listening to WRFL's Campus Voices. I'm Hunter Mitchell, and we're talking about the new hepatitis A and meningococcal immunization regulations with Kentucky's Commissioner for the Department of Public Health, Dr. Jeffrey Howard, the Health and Wellness Coordinator of Fayette County Public Schools, Ms. Debbie Bowen, and we have the Clinical Services Officer of the Lexington-Fayette County Health Department, Ms. Jill Keyes. So, Jill, according to the CDC's website, the cost of the hepatitis A vaccine ranges from about $18 to $30. And the cost of the meningococcal vaccine ranges from about $70 to $120. Do you guys see those kind of price ranges here in Kentucky as well? We didn't know if that was just regulated by the CDC, or Dr. Howard, could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so those price ranges are fairly consistent. We often, especially with local health departments, who sometimes kids go there to get their immunizations for some reasons. Like, for example, when I was a child, I went to the Bell County and Harlan County health departments to get my immunizations because my family couldn't afford them. And so there's ways that we can subsidize those. All insurance plans will cover these vaccines as part of the preventative schedule. So the cost should not be a barrier to the folks out there who are concerned about getting this vaccination for their children.
So your insurance company will cover it?
Insurance will cover that.
Awesome.
We also have 8 clinics that are located in 8 of our elementary schools. They are staffed by nurse practitioner and an RN. They can give those vaccines there as well. We have recommended that our employees also get the hepatitis A. Our insurance will cover that. So there may be a copay on it, but the copay is usually reasonable.
Okay. Debbie, we talked about this a little bit, but what should parents do if their kids haven't already gotten that first round of shot? You said it wasn't too late. Is that correct?
Correct.
So as long as they get the shot at least sometime before school, you guys have a program in place where they can...
August 15th.
Okay, gotcha. Awesome. Thank you guys so much. So you guys mentioned that it's not just students who can get it because you're recommending it to employees as well. So, Dr. Howard, according to the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services, older people are more likely to have symptoms than children. So, in your professional opinion, how important is it that adults are also getting this vaccination?
So, for hepatitis A, we recommend it for adults at risk. Mm-hmm. So, especially during a time of an outbreak, as we have now, those who are using drugs intravenously or drugs in general, or the homeless population, there's very clear recommendations for hepatitis A vaccinations. Other than that, we only recommend it per your individual physician's guidance. There's no clear cut recommendation for hepatitis A. Regarding meningococcal vaccine, again, it's going to be at, in adult populations who haven't had it, it's going to be at-risk populations. For example, as you guys may recall, an issue that translates directly to the University of Kentucky, in the last few months, there was a media report of a student at the University of Kentucky who had a potential meningococcal infection. That's a very scary proposition because what you're concerned about is in a dormitory-type setting, that disease, that bacteria can spread. So it's very important for college-age students, to, especially those living in a dormitory, to have those vaccinations.
Debbie, after hearing that, how important is it, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but just how important is it that your employees are getting that vaccination?
We have recommended that our custodians, who usually empty the trash, they deal with the restrooms, cleaning up after students, and they come in contact with bodily fluids. We give them universal precautions classes, and they are taught how to use universal precautions. But just to be on the safe side, we've recommended that they have it. Our special ed paras who do diaper changes with some of our students, and our cafeteria workers. Those are the three groups that we're targeting at this point in time.
Are there any exemptions for students, like for medical or religious reasons at all?
Yes, the state of Kentucky allows an exemption for students who are medically fragile, and that's why we want to get the rest of the students immunized against disease. And we also have provided a religious exemption as well.
So what medical reasons would prevent someone from getting that vaccine?
I'm going to bat Dr. that Howard. To the doctor.
So what I would do, what I would recommend in that is for folks who are concerned that their child may not be able, should get the vaccine based on medical comorbidities or they have a sick child, they need to see their personal pediatrician and talk about
that.
Complex case-by-case decision that you really need to know the specificities of a particular patient's medical history.
Can it be ordered individually the way like a flu vaccine could be ordered individually?
I'm not exactly following what you're saying, but so yes, like, it is ordered individually.
If you're allergic to eggs, some people can get a flu vaccine differently. Is that the same way with eggs?
I'm not sure enough with this vaccine. Okay. As far as I know, there's no allergic reactions to this particular vaccine, but I cannot recall. With the flu vaccine, the particular issue is that the vaccine is cultured within eggs, but you have some vaccines that are not cultured within eggs. I do believe in the next several years we're going to move completely away from egg cultures. Interestingly enough, Hunter, the reason that the flu vaccine may not be as effective, or there's reports of that this year, is because the particular virus that is prominent this year, which is H3N2, a type of influenza type A, mutates at a particularly high rate in those egg cultures. So we're moving to more of a cell media based culture.
Is there a percentage of students that you guys aim for, of people vaccinated that would protect most people at schools?
So what you're getting at is herd immunity. So if you vaccinated most people, the folks that are not that are unvaccinated will be protected. There's not a particular percentage. In this regard, we're shooting for 100%.
Yes.
We would like all students to get vaccinated, and that's the purpose of the rule. Now, with that said, we understand we allow the exemption because we understand some people may have religious reasons they don't want to vaccinate. We actually loosened up that regulation and allowed them to, instead of having to see a physician to get that exemption, they can see a notary public.
We've also mentioned that students that are 16 also have to get the quadrivalent meningococcal vaccine. Why is the starting age for that at 16?
Like I was telling you, Hunter, the particular risk for this disease and the risk for spreading it tends to occur in people who are congregating in an area, so living in dormitories. So it protects you about that college age time when you may be going off to college and living in a dormitory.
Jill, with the flu outbreak that we've had this season, how has that affected students' abilities to get these vaccines? Has it made it harder just because hospitals are so crowded or not?
I'm not sure that it's made it more difficult. I know, you know, obviously doctor's offices, urgent treatment centers, hospitals are going to be more crowded because they are seeing children with flu-like illnesses. And parents may want to avoid the office during this time to not be exposed. But certainly talk to your doctor and get in. Most of the offices, you know, have appointments. They have times where they do well-child exams, and they can see the student and get them vaccinated.
Let me piggyback on that to say that most offices will have pediatric offices will have a sick and a well area. So call and make your appointment, especially if your pediatric office has a sick and a well area. You'll be able to go into the well area. You won't have to worry about being exposed to flu or flu-like illnesses.
if people have questions, and this is for all three of you, because, you know, you're all come from a different background, or they're confused, where can they go to get more information? So whether it be about the disease, about the vaccine, or, you know, for parents, especially, you know, in the school system. So Dr. Howard, we can start with you.
So there's always information on our CHFS website. Mm-hmm. Also, I encourage them to visit the Centers for Disease Control, CDC.gov website. There's plenty of good information there. I'm sure each of these localities has their own information site as well.
Yes, the district has a wellness website. They can also consult with their school nurse. They're welcome to call me as well or email me at my district email.
Okay.
It's Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, dot Bowen, B-O-I-A-N, at fayette.kyschools.us.
Anything else you add, Jill?
Obviously, call your pediatrician's office. If you have questions, you can call the health department to ask questions. We have nurses that can call you back and answer any of the questions you may have.
Awesome. Before we go, I'd like to thank our guests for joining us. Again, we have Dr. Jeffrey Howard, Miss Debbie Bowen, and Miss Jill Keys. We hope those of you listening learned a lot about the new immunization regulations, and please join us next week for our discussion on net neutrality. For Campus Voices, I'm your host, Hunter Mitchell, and you're listening to WRFL Lexington 88.1 FM.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.FM/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.